Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for people who play with needles.
That is correct. Who do we have today?
Well, we have two people. Now, this is one of my crazy ideas, okay? So we have Melissa McLeod, right? Is that how you say it, Melissa?
It sure is.
Melissa McLeod, and she's the new owner of the Wool and the Floss shop in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, which is needlepoint and knitting. And I've been following her for a while as she purchased the shop from the previous owner and remodeling and so on and so forth. And then we have with us Kim Young from Sassy Jack's Stitchery in Weaverville, North Carolina. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Thank you.
Welcome.
So my crazy idea was, you know, we hear about shops going out of business all the time, internet taking business away from shops. Here's two people who just in the past few months here have started new businesses for all intents and purposes. Melissa, you have an established business, but you shut down and did some remodeling and opened back up again, and so it's in many ways new for you. And so I just wanted to hear from you guys what you're doing in this day and age of struggling shops and internet to start a shop, and you know, obviously you fully intend for them to succeed long term. So what kinds of things are you doing and what are your plans? And then of course we want to know what you guys do individually as stitchers and or knitters and so on and so forth. So it's just my crazy idea to let's hear from a couple of people who are starting local needlework shops and what you guys are doing. So that's why we have you together. We appreciate it.
Sounds great.
Yep. So let's start. Melissa, let's start with you because you're from Michigan, I'm from Michigan, so we'll start with that. We'll use that as the tie-in. So the Wool and the Floss. Now, you bought this not too long ago, a year ago maybe? Maybe not that much?
I'm actually the new owner as of April 1st.
Oh, my. Okay.
And recently.
Yes. So just a couple months, yeah.
Yeah. So tell the story. Yeah, tell the story behind all that.
Okay, so I actually am a lifelong Grosse Pointer. I left, you know, for a few years, came back, and I learned how to stitch in the classroom of this shop when I was about 7 years old, from a woman by the name of Marnie Ritter. And Marnie is still a big name in the needlepoint world, but you would know her as Marnie. I'm sorry, she was Marnie Fessenden. The name you would know her by now is Marnie Ritter. And she did a lot of counted work, and that type of thing. So I, you know, still have my first needlepoint samplers that she taught me on plain canvas and, you know, different stitches and little boxes and the whole shebang. And I needlepointed on and off a little bit here and there throughout my childhood, and then kind of abandoned it when I was, you know, a little too cool for it in high school and college. rediscovered my love of it when I was on bed rest with my twins that are now 20, and became an active customer here at the store, the Wool and the Floss. Jean had owned it for 26 years. And so I just, you know, started stitching again when I was 29 and never put down my needle. And she approached me about 5 years ago and asked me if I would be interested in coming to work here one day a week. And I said, well, you know, I can't possibly do that because I can't work on the weekends, and you can't have someone working at a retail store who says they can't work weekends. And she's like, for you and your expertise, yes, I can. So that's how the story started. And I worked here one day a week, you know, filling in here and there more often, and soon became our primary needlepoint teacher. And I had some retail background. So when I came to work here, you know, as most of you, I'm sure, probably realize, the gals who work in your local needlepoint shop aren't paid $1 million, nor do the shop owners make $1 million. But I came to work thinking that, you know, she was 70 years old when I came to work here. So I knew that at some point she'd decide to slow down and smell the roses. So I decided to, you know, give it a try and see what I thought about maybe a bigger interest in the long run. So I kind of knew when I came here that this was kind of where my head was, that perhaps it would be something I'd be doing someday. So when I she decided it was time to retire, she came to me and said, I think you'd be a pretty good fit. And, you know, that's kind of how it all fell into place. I've got a business background and I knew the needlepoint side. I still tell all our customers when they walk in the door, that I'm a dabbling knitter and a very experienced needlepointer, but there's always someone here who's an expert knitter, so they're always in good hands when they walk in the door. So that's kind of the story of how I got from A to B, I guess.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So, and then speaking of corporate background, Kim, you have a pretty extensive corporate background before you started Sassy Jacks. So how does that come
about?
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting. So I noted that, Melissa, when you said you had a business background, I come from a similar background. My background before this, I spent about 25 years in corporate America as a corporate controller. So I'm a CPA with an MBA and did needlework really for stress relief, to be honest. And it was something that I could finish, you know. And so I learned to embroider when I was about 6 years old with my mom and one of my neighbors, and they were just trying to get rid of me, you know, give her something to do because I was very annoying, and so it kind of kept me pacified. And then I learned a cross stitch in Sunday school in the fifth grade, and I kind of left it all behind, similar to what you did when I was in high school. But in college, when I realized I had no money, I went back to it because it's a relatively affordable hobby for a college student. So I picked it back up, and you know, I kind of waffled between needlework at that point and you know, reading, which was another hobby while I was doing my day job, for the next few years. And I guess about 10 years ago, I learned a needlepoint from Michael Boren. Actually, he taught me how to needlepoint, and I was in Raleigh, and I was a member of some guilds there that I just had some really fabulous resources to help me with the needlepoint side. So I'm just very grateful for that. And I started traveling pretty extensively with Susan Greening Davis, who's a name in the industry that's been around for a long time. She was doing a lot of needlework tours to Europe and different places. And so I kind of tagged on with her and did a lot of those tours, and I got to meet and study from some fabulous people, you know, in different parts of the world. And I'm still doing that. So that's fantastic. So, you know, my goal is to bring some of those things that I've learned back into the shop and teach people. And that's the focus of Sassy Jack Stitchery. I mean, I really want it to be a place where people can come and enjoy themselves. And, you know, we have Stitch Night every week. We started that the first week, and this is our fourth week open. And we've had a great group every week, and people doing all kinds of different work. You know, and I'm looking forward to education. So we have some plans to build a classroom building eventually, and big enough to hold our classes and just keep that going. And we've got some classes scheduled, which we can talk about later. But I'm just super excited to present people with the passion behind needlework. You know, I mean, it's a hobby, yeah, but it's been around for generations and centuries. And I think that the love that people have for it just really becomes enhanced when they start to understand and hear the stories of what it meant to people, you know, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, and you know, how it kept, you know, some people from destitution, you know, in certain parts of the world. And so it's kind of my goal to give people a place to enjoy needlework, but to also learn something about it and, you know, let them feel like they're part of something, you know, part of something that's been around for many, many generations. And people have been receptive to that. You know, I enjoy telling people stories and hearing stories. So it's been good so far.
That's great. Well, go ahead, Christy.
No, I was going to say, I really appreciate the historical aspect of it, because the history of needlework, particularly in comparison from different areas of the world, is really interesting. So, yeah, that part of it, I can understand the appeal of that, and being able to travel and hear it firsthand as opposed to from books, or, you know, that's quite a privilege.
It was a privilege, and I kind of skipped, you know, my story of how I ended my corporate world and moved to needlework full time, but that happened pretty recently, about a month ago as well. So I kind of parted ways with my corporate background and devoted myself to the shop, and we got our shop open about 4 weeks ago. But yeah, I certainly recognize that it has been quite a privilege. And, you know, I'm just grateful though to the people that took the time to educate, you know, and even the people that I met in Europe, you know, some of the, like, I'll have a hard time saying her last name, but Uta Harbesgaard. I know I said that wrong, but she's in Copenhagen, Denmark. And I mean, she, you know, was one of the women that helped bring you know, Danish cross stitch, you know, into the U.S. and educate people, and people went over there. And Lorraine Mutz in Celle, Germany, and Lizine Happel is a big Schwalmwork name, and I've gotten to study with her twice. And, you know, the fact that those women at their age take time to talk to younger people and to educate them, I mean, they're, a lot of them don't need to do that, you know, and so they're really, it is a privilege. I guess that's a fantastic word for it, because they're at an age where they really, you know, to Melissa's point, want to stop and smell the roses, you know, and to have them take time and bring us into their home in a lot of ways was just, you know, it really shaped me, I guess, and what I wanted to do with this shop.
Lizine Happel, that I follow her blog. Wow.
Yeah, she's
holy
fantastic.
Smokes.
Yeah.
That's so, some talent there. Wow.
Yeah. And I'm not the most talented Schwalmwork person, so it's been entertaining to, she's very, very sweet and nice, and, you know, to have her have to correct me is fun because it, you know, it's just, and I'm in front of 20 people too, so it's awesome, but I have learned a lot, you know, so it's been a great experience.
Yeah. Melissa, what you have knitting? Is it primarily needlepoint? Describe what your mix is.
Well, I haven't looked at our numbers lately. When I purchased the shop, one of the things that I had to straighten around was our former owner was kind of the opposite of me. She was an outstanding knitter. Like, there was no knitting question this woman could not answer for anyone, and just an amazing talent in the knitting world. And so she was primarily a knitter who dabbled in needlepoint. And by the time I was transitioning the business from her to myself, I said, one of the problems that I think we've got going on here is I feel like our inventory isn't in line with our sales numbers. And so lo and behold, I looked, and at that point in time, 65% of our sales was needlepoint and 35% was yarn related. And our inventory was 70% knitting related and 30% needlepoint related. And she was an artist through and through. And I was a retirement plan consultant, so I'm a number cruncher. So we always would laugh because we would look at things from very different angles, but we both very much appreciated each other's, you know, viewpoint. So that was one of my first challenges, was kind of to align it so that our inventory was more 50-50 and, you know, get to the point where our sales hopefully are 50-50. What she had told me is over the years that sales would skew back and forth. Like, you'd have a big, heavy knitting year and your needlepoint would die off. And then you'd have a heavy needlepoint year and your knitting would die off. And she said, I could never figure out why. And she was telling me about when things were more knitting oriented, when they were more needlepoint oriented. And I think it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that needlepoint is a much more expensive hobby than knitting. And so it's economically driven. So, you know, the last couple of years, our economy has been pretty good. So needlepoint is up. And I think when the economy takes a dive, the knitting becomes more popular, because you buy your yarn and your expense of it is done. You know, you don't have the back end finishing costs and things that you have with needlepoint. So we do both, and we strive to be 50-50 in our inventory at this point. And hopefully the sales will fall that way too, but the sales will fall how they fall. So we'll, you know, it's a constant balancing act, just like it was when I was a retirement plan consultant and realigning the retirement accounts so they met with the goals of the customer. That things really aren't all that different. It's just a lot more fun.
Yeah, that's an interesting tie-in, sort of looking at it from an economic perspective, because one of the things that we have wondered is sort of younger people are embracing knitting, you know, wholeheartedly and not not going into the needlepoint world nearly as much. And so we've talked to lots of people and gotten different opinions about why they think that is. And I think that you maybe have just discovered the reason, that it's really easy to get in on the ground level with knitting. You know, you could buy some yarn for less than $10 and be off and running, whereas right. even just the startup, you know, what we call the infrastructure costs of needlepoint is significantly higher. So right. it would be tough for a college student, you know, or a younger person, you know, who doesn't have a good, you know, full-time job to really embrace this and do it like that. You know, right. the best that they could do would be small kits, and, you know, you don't get nearly the reward you get out of a larger piece.
Well, I have a number of customers, too, that are, like, you know, I don't know, I guess they'd be in their 50s and 60s, and their, you know, daughters are, you know, 30 years younger than they are. And, you know, they might be in a place where there's not as much disposable income at that phase of life. Mm-hmm. And I see them buying things for their daughters because they know that they want to keep the love for the hobby alive, and that their daughters, and in some cases sons, are not in a position to, you know, embrace it financially. And so they'll bring in their finishing for them and take care of that end of it and things. So they're doing things to make sure that the people that are in the tougher disposable income world mm-hmm. can keep the love going on.
And is your needlepoint painted, charted, a good mix? How do you go about that?
We have almost exclusively hand-painted canvases. There are not a lot of people in our area that do counted work. We don't have one counted piece in the store. I don't know if we'd even sell it if I tried. People look at it as a very different beast. They think it's a lot harder, which, you know, in some ways it is, in some ways it isn't. It depends, you know, how you look at it. So yeah, we do almost all hand-painted needlepoint canvases, and I try to keep a good range of options in here. You know, we have canvases as low as, you know, $28, and, you know, I'll on up to, you know, and obviously the hundreds of dollars. And I try to keep some lower price threads in here so that the entry level project can be somewhat affordable on a relative basis.
Right. Well, that's interesting because Christine, a couple weeks ago, was in New York at a shop, and it was completely painted canvas.
Right, and, exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah. Just the clientele just won't support charted. That's right. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Once a year, I usually do. I don't know if any of you are familiar. Sign of the Arrow does annual piece every year. It's just a little yes. ornament that they do every year, and they offer it as a painted piece and a counted piece. And I basically make myself do their little counted piece every year. My daughter happens to go to school in St. Louis, so it's a shop I'm familiar with, and I just think mentally it's really good to, you know, wrap your head around things a little bit differently and make your mind go through the gyrations, and there's a lot more thinking involved in the counted work. So I think it's good to keep you sharp in a different way.
Yeah. Our daughter lives in St. Louis. I know the Sign of the Arrow. I've been in that shop several times. So yes. Yeah. That's a neat thing they do with that ornament every year.
Yeah. But my students think I'm crazy. They're like, wait, you just start out with this blank canvas and like it's really quite simple. It's much easier than it looks. And I've done a few classes. I've done a few classes in shop with blank canvas and tried to lead them down the path gently. Just in terms of, like, I taught, you know, we did a cookie cutter class where you literally described your shape, drew your shape on the blank canvas. And I showed them how to do like a chevron design, and I showed them how to do the good old fashioned Chody's plaid. And, you know, that was kind of like awe-inspiring from my students, which was kind of funny. but, yeah, so I've tried to gently lead them down that path, but it's a very reluctant group.
Now, Kim, you have a different mix altogether, I think. I mean, you do some cross-stitch, and what all do you have in your shop?
Well, we're pretty heavy on cross stitch, but just to kind of give you the flip side of the coin, we also do counted needlepoint and only counted needlepoint. We don't do any painted canvas. So probably for me, my love of the counted comes from, you know, being an accountant, and I just like the precision, and I love the specialty stitches. So it gives a chance to
finish. Oh, I'm starting to like you more and more, Kim. This is just fantastic.
So, you know, for folks who, you know, can't get the entry level into painted canvas, you know, they have the opportunity to enjoy counted canvas with all the specialty stitches, and they get to use the same beautiful fibers. So, you know, what attracts me to needlepoint is primarily all the fibers. I mean, and the stitches. It's just incredible. And my, me personally, I struggle with painted canvas because I struggle with which stitch to use. Unless I have a stitch guide, you know, if I have a stitch guide, it's fine. But outside of that, I kind of struggle. And so, you know, we focus on making sure that we have a great selection of fiber that will cross over into painted canvas, and also satisfy the counted canvas folks that we have. Because I do have a lot of painted canvas people in the community, and so they come here for the fiber, and they're really happy to just come in and look and be able to buy some of the fiber and touch it and see it, rather than having to go online, which for a lot of people that's what they've had to do for a long time. We are one of the only shops in this local.
Oh, we lost you.
So, you know, we are a product here in Asheville of all the shops that they've just closed down. And so I've had a lot of people coming in just really, really super excited to see and touch things, whether it's fiber or fabric, you know, and to visually see all the different charts that we do have for cross stitch. And then the other thing that we pick up is punch needle. And so there's a pretty big community, a large demographic of people out there who have crossed over from cross stitch into punch needle. And it's kind of a primitive, they call it prim work, in some ways, but it's a really beautiful art form, and you don't have to count anything. And so for people who don't like to count, it's kind of like fill in the number, you know, or color in the number. They have their design on the fabric, and they punch it in with whatever color they're using. And so again, they get the opportunity to use some different fibers and, you know, get the textual satisfaction of that to have the texture with them. And they get to create something that's really a beautiful little piece of art when it's done. So that's been fun too. And then we do hand embroidery. So, you know, we kind of cross over. I've had a lot of people, more than I thought, actually come in and be very interested in hand embroidery. And in our stitch night last week, we had a young woman who, in front of us, drew on her fabric and then started to embroider what she had drawn, which to me was kind of mind-boggling. You know, as an accountant, I'm used to everything being in order, you know, and I never even doing that. I was like, wow. And then we had a woman who was doing some beautiful crewel work. And so there's a lot of people doing crewel work here. And so that's kind of on my mind. I may pick up some wool for that, you know, and a few things for that, because there's not a lot of opportunity, again, for people to actually see and touch the fibers that they use for that. And, you know, we had painted canvas needlepoint, somebody doing that here, and somebody doing punch needle, and then, of course, cross stitch. And it's just it's a real mix here in the Asheville area. We're in Weaverville, which is just north of Asheville, so a lot of our people are coming in from Asheville of what people are interested in, you know. And so that's kind of my challenge is, you know, as a shop owner, to try to meet the need without just becoming, you know, overwhelmed with what we carry. And so I've really focused on those four things that I named, which is, you know, counted cross stitch, counted needlepoint, hand embroidery, and punch needle. And I think that's gonna meet most of our needs here, and I'm happy to special order a few things here and there for other people. But you know, I think we'll do well with that demographic of people.
Yeah, that's quite a mix there. That's a lot of inventory to keep up with that.
Yeah, yeah, it's, you know, the fibers, though, cross over into, it's the same fibers pretty much, which is kind of the saving grace of it all. So, you know, a lot of the same fibers can be used for cross-stitch and counted needlepoint. And then some of the fibers cross over between cross-stitch and punch needle. It's basically the same fiber. It's just different strands. And then hand embroidery, of course, uses the same fiber as cross-stitch and needlepoint. So the fiber is pretty similar throughout, although we carry some really nice silks that my cross-stitchers may not use very often, but the needle pointers will. And then we're heavy on charts for cross stitch. That's kind of the thing with cross stitch is that, you know, there's a lot of charts out there. And so we are pretty heavy on charts from that perspective. But
yeah. Melissa, do you find, we've talked many times, we've had a couple of guests on, young people who are in the needlepoint world. Do you find that, as Christine said, the young people are sticking with or really interested in knitting? Do you see a lot of activity from young people there?
Well, I guess it depends on what your definition of young is.
In the needlework, it is a little different than general populace, I would say.
Yes. I mean, I just had my 50th birthday, and I will be honest, we don't have a lot of customers that come in that are younger than I am. Most of our customers, I would say, are probably, you know, 55 to 75 would be our bulk of our customers that are in store. We also, I happen to live in an area that, like I did, people live here through high school and then they leave, they go off to college somewhere far away. They usually stay far away for a little bit and then they don't really move back here until their 30s. We don't have a lot of, in general population, a lot of people from 18 to 30 living around here. There's not a lot of, you know, crazy nightlife and fun young things to do, where I'm very much, you know, old fashioned suburbia, and it's great for us 50-year-olds, but, you know, not so great maybe if you're in your 20s. So that said, you know, our younger customers that we do have tend to be more knitters than needle pointers. But I have a lot of customers now that have crossed over from knitting to needlepoint. And the gals that work here that have been here a long time are very sweet. They credit me with that because they're like, your enthusiasm for what you do is just so contagious that it's hard not to want to give it a try. Because I just, you know, obviously absolutely love to have a needle in my hand and to be designing stitches. And I had to laugh a little bit with Kimberly comment about she can't pick a stitch for a design area, and I'm like, that's what keeps me in business right here, because somehow I've managed to be able to do it. There's a lot of people who do it better than I do, but I'm brave enough to do it and write a lot of custom stitch guides and create projects from our painted canvases and things, and because for whatever reason there's a lot of people that are intimidated to choose their own stitches. But that's what certainly keeps our doors open. But,
How do you get over that hump? 'Cause I have a couple of painted canvases sitting on a shelf and I pulled them out from time to time and thought, all right, now what stitches would I use in these areas? And that's pretty much where it stops. Oh, I might try this or I might try that. What is it that gets you over the hump of selecting stitches? I mean, so many people just say, give me a stitch guide and I'll stitch it. But to me, that takes half the challenge out of it.
Well, it does. But I will tell you, I love a good stitch guide as best as the next stitcher. I love the challenge of figuring out what works best on a stitch guide, but I love or on a canvas and creating my own stitch guide. But I also sometimes love to sit down and have someone give me a set of directions. And it's, you know, it's, sometimes you just need to sit and do and not necessarily sit and think. And so that's where I think the beauty of a stitch guide comes is, you know, someone else has already solved the mysteries and figured out what's going to work best somewhere else. And again, it's a guide, so you don't always do exactly what they say. But, you know, many times that person, whoever it may be, has auditioned a number of stitches for different areas and figured out what works. And they may have gone through, you know, five or six go rounds before they settled on the right answer. I do write stitch guides for my customers, and I've got classes a few times a week where we, you know, pick stitches and I throw things out at them, and I'll always say, well, I can usually guess about 90% of the time and be right, and my customers are very sweet. They'll usually say, oh, no, I think you're more like 95%, but sometimes I'll throw a stitch at somebody, and it's just a complete bomb, because you don't know until you actually stitch it. We all know that. You know, you put needle in canvas, and suddenly what looked good on paper looks like a disaster. So, but to me, you know, it's a juxtaposition of combining different textures with different orientations and kind of following the direction of what's happening on the canvas and trying to mix in some, you know, vertical stitches with some diagonal stitches with some horizontal stitches. And most importantly, throwing in that good old basic tent stitch and giving the viewer's eye a chance to rest somewhere and not making it overly busy. And I think I've figured that out more just from taking a number of classes. I haven't been fortunate enough to be overseas and doing these fabulous things that sounds like Kimberly was, but I've had my fair share of my own local heroes. I've taken classes with Carolyn Baird and Laura Taylor and Jill Rigoli and, oh, I can't even think of who else right now, but lots of the good names in the good old USA have taught me a lot too. And just being on some of the Facebook groups and studying the work that other people have done, you know, you just get a feel for what combinations will work together. And I have a stack of stitch books like nobody's business. It's a little embarrassing. So,
well, is it? But that's, you know, that's almost a requirement, isn't it, to have at least two or three stitch books so you have a library of resource to pull from.
Well, I agree. Two or three is probably a requirement, but the 30 to 50 that I probably own might be
okay, you're out of control. All right. You're out of control. All right.
But, you know, the more you look, the more you find, the more you see, and, you know, it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, there's another book collector. This hobby, they aren't collecting threads, they're collecting books. It's
you got it.
I don't see the problem with that, Gary.
No, it's fine with me. It sure seems to be prevalent. Yeah, lots of them. Yeah. Kim, you talked about, I want to make sure before we run out of time that we talk about the classes that you guys are offering. And Kim, you talked about first question is, where's this Sassy Jacks come from? What is that?
Well, yeah. So, I had a cat when, 17 years ago. I adopted a cat and thought it was a boy. And so I named it Jack. Jack was my favorite name. So I named it Jack and took it to the vet and found out it was a girl. So we promptly renamed her Sassafras Jack. And, we ended up calling her Sassy Jack, and she's still alive and she's a great little cat. So that's kind of the first place it came from. And then I really love Halloween and all things fall. And so the concept of jack-o'-lanterns, you know, we pulled that into what I think of as the name and how we design the logo and things like that. So, you know, we have a lot of pumpkins and things like that on our webpage. And as Halloween gets a little bit closer, probably pretty soon, unfortunately, we'll have to preempt the holiday, but we'll start to do some decorations around here for Halloween. And so Sassy Jack's Stitchery, really is a play on names between, you know, my little kitty, Sassy Jack, and, all things Halloween for jack-o'-lantern. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Makes some sense then.
Now, to me, yeah.
Yeah. But you're in a store. Would you said it the other night when we talked, a refurbished furniture store? Is that right?
It is. Yeah. But so then, it's kind of Main Street Americana. It's, in downtown Weaverville, right on the main street, and they rehab this beautiful 100-some-year-old building for us. And the cool thing about it is I took the bottom half of the space, and a woman who's just a little bit younger than me and has a passion for quilting took the other half. And so,
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, so we have two shops right beside each other for the time being, and we actually have a door between us that we open sometimes, and her shop is called Five Little Monkeys Stitch and Sew, or Quilt and Sew, Five Little Monkeys Quilt and Sew. And
you guys just can't have normal names, can you?
No. And hers comes from her kids, so she named it after her kids. But it's kind of great because on the other side of me is a really well-known bakery, and it's called Well Bread Bakery, and it's been, you know, it's gotten national press. And so the trail kind of goes from the bakery into Sassy Jack Stitchery over to Five Little Monkeys. And sometimes it starts the other way and ends at the bakery, but invariably they pass through all three. So it's a great spot to be in. Yeah, it's nice.
But now, okay, so that's only temporary because you're moving to, I'm really excited for you about this house that you're redoing.
Yeah, so our original plan was to open in an old folk Victorian that I bought in 2014. And so I really wanted to, I'm from here, but I lived away from here for about 24 years and really wanted to come home. And I knew I wanted to open the shop. And so I was looking for a home for the shop. I wanted to own the space. That was kind of one of my requirements that I had to open the shop. And so I bought this beautiful 150-year-old folk Victorian that had sat empty for 17 years. And, it's on the National Listing of Historic Places, and the name of it is the Baird House, Zebulon Baird House, and it's actually in the town of Woodfin, which is the actual hometown that I grew up in, which is 2.5 miles down the road, so it's literally next door. In 2016, at the Nashville market, you know, I consulted with some people, and we decided 2017, March, would be a great time for a class. A grand opening and a class to kind of launch it. And we thought, well, a year should be enough time. We've been working on it for a year and a half. We thought we should get it done. And so, you know, we continued to work on the house. And when November rolled around in 2016 last year, I had to punt. I was like, there's no way we're going to be done in time. You know, our class is March 17th, St. Patrick's Day coming up. And I was like, yeah, this is not going to happen. And it just takes a lot more time to, you know, rehab a 150-year-old house than I ever thought it would. And that probably stems from the fact that I've never done that before. So, you know, so we found this space here, and we'll be here for about a year up until next spring. And we do expect at this point where we are to have the house done by the end of the year. And so we will kind of pick everything up and move it down the hill. And it's actually on the same road. So if you follow the back roads and you don't get on the interstate, it's literally on the same road, 2.5 miles south, more close to Asheville. And so, 85% to 90% of the people that walk in the door here say, well, how about that old house down the road? Because I put up a sign down there when I thought I was going to be open. So my sign's been up going on a year now.
Oh,
it's
no.
Huge. It says Sassy Jack Stitchery. It's a huge sign. And so people know where it's going, which benefits me. I didn't plan it that way, but it's a huge benefit to me because I think that, you know, my people will follow me down there. Most of them know that it's there. It's only going to be, you know, a small portion of people that I'll have to really communicate too well to say, hey, you know, we're moving. But the house itself is well loved by the community. It's a beautiful old house, and it has all the gingerbread on the outside, and it's just a great location for a little shop. And the local people love it, and they're so thrilled that we're trying to save it because they really thought it would get torn down, and it probably was in danger of that for a while. And so it has its own great story, which just blends in well with ours, and we're excited about that too. But it has been, you know, 3 years now of a whole lot of work. And so every night when we finish at the shop, except for tonight, we go over there and work.
Oh, boy.
So you know, we work there, and we work there on the weekends when we're not here. You know, whatever time we have, we're over there. And so we're pretty excited about that, too. And I think people will like it just as well as this shop. This shop is a beautiful shop. It's really open and airy, and it's just been remodeled. And the house will be, you know, some separate rooms to it. So it'll have a different feel entirely. But, you know, every space has its own character. And so we'll just try to, you know, be true to whatever the character is and make sure that we have always have room for people to stitch and, you know, hang out and see what we're doing and teach and things like that. So, but yeah. I appreciate you bringing that up. I'm pretty excited about it myself.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And Melissa, as I recall, and maybe I imagine more of this than is true, but when you had a chance, when you were in the transition, you shut down the business for all intents and purposes and pretty much redid the store. Is that right?
We did. We are as well in a little old house. Ours was built in 1920, so a lot newer than Kimberly's. But I do not own the building. As I said, Jean had been here for 26 years. And the place was basically falling down around us. I really wanted to stay here because, as I mentioned, this is where I learned to stitch when I was 7 years old. This, even though Jean had been here 26 years, this building has been a needlepoint or knitting or crewel shop back to 1960. So it's kind of a destination place. Like anyone in the Metro Detroit area they'll pop in the door here or there and say, oh my gosh, I haven't been in town in 15 years. I'm so glad you guys are still here.
Yeah.
And, the phone number has even been the same since 1960, yeah. even though the name has been different. So I really wanted to stay, but literally the lighting was terrible. The wallpaper was peeling off the walls. The heating and air conditioning was terrible. In the summer, we were sweating to death. In the winter, we were freezing to death.
Yeah.
And so I did my due diligence and I went and looked at other spaces, but I really didn't want to move because I knew that this building could be just perfect for us. And I didn't want to deal with the whole moving thing. And, so I went to the landlord and said, you know, I was going to be the new business owner and that I would more than anything love to stay. However, the fact that my employees had to come to work in long underwear, and when the thermostat was set at 70, it was 62 degrees in here, and when the wind blew, you could feel it through the windows, uh-huh. and the lighting was terrible, blah, blah, blah. So to make a long story short, she was incredibly business-minded. She happens to be, I think she told me she's almost 80 years old, and she was very... very business savvy and realized that she could let me go and then have to redo the whole building to get a new renter, or she could redo the whole building and I could stay and she'd have a guaranteed renter. So we have a brand new ceiling throughout, brand new lights throughout, a real sink where we can wash some dishes and things so we can host events. We did find out during the remodeling, when we closed down the store on March 31st, I took all of the inventory home to my basement, schlepped it all down my stairs. And while they came in for the reconstruction, my husband was here helping one day as we were moving out. And he said, you know, those areas over there look kind of sort of like windowsills. And there'd always been things stacked in front of it. And I looked over and I'm like, oh my gosh, I think you're right. So sure enough, we take down these bulletin boards that canvases have been hanging on, probably back to 1960. And there are windows behind the bulletin boards.
Oh boy.
That not only are their windows, they're wide open with very little insulation.
Oh my gosh.
So we realized this might be why we were freezing to death the whole time. So that solved the heating and cooling problem pretty much singularly right there. So we had another door, it kind of sounds like Kimberly's place where there was a door between the shops. Well, there used to be a door between our shop and the shop next door, but it had been closed up years ago, but they never took out the door. So, you know, that made things a little awkward in here. So anyways, in 6 weeks' time, the whole place was basically gutted and redone, and I put in a POS system over that course of time. So while the workmen were here and I was kind of managing the construction, I was also bringing the inventory up and down my basement stairs and loading it into the POS system. So it was a completely crazy 6 weeks. At the end of it, I had construction guys in here hanging slat board and hanging more bulletin board and all those sorts of things. And it was kind of funny because one of the guys that was doing the work, I happened to know from high school but hadn't seen in 30-some years. And he, I guess a couple days after he was here, ran into a friend of ours. And he just said, I couldn't believe the day we were done. And then we had to come back 2 days later that she had that shop completely put together in 2 days, which, of course, I didn't do it by myself. I have 9 fabulous staff members, and we all worked like crazy and managed to get all of everything put back together. So we were closed from April 1st through May 8th. We reopened on May 8th.
Yeah. Did the newly discovered windows stay as windows, or did you cover them up?
Unfortunately,
again?
They had to be covered up, but they were covered up properly because
with actual insulation.
Yeah, because what you could see on the other side of it was the Tyvek that backed up to the siding on the outside.
So they're covered from the outside too.
They were covered from the outside. Yes, yes. But one of them didn't even have a complete window in it. It was very strange. The whole thing was strange.
So no wonder you were freezing.
it was terrible. So my customers are thrilled now because in the wintertime they'd be so cold. Like, it's one thing to come and shop and have it be a little cool. It's another thing to sit for 2 hours and stitch and have it be cold. I have one customer who literally would bring blankets with her. It was very embarrassing. And it wasn't my shop at the time, but I still found it embarrassing. So that problem is solved. And so we're all very happy, and everyone seems to love the new look. It's very organized. We've had a number of people walked in and they're like, oh, your fireplace is just darling. Has that always been here? I'm like, yeah, there was just always a lot of stuff in front of it. So yeah, with a little reorganization, you know, when you move everything out, you have the luxury of making a better plan. It, you know, over 26 years, things had just kind of evolved. So, it's a nice new look. We moved our classrooms from the back of the store to in front of the two front windows, and it just seems a lot more spacious and more inviting is kind of the comments I'm getting from the in-store customers. So
yeah,
it's been well received.
I said a little while ago, and we have yet to get to it, I want to hear both of you what you're doing with classes and your classroom space.
Yeah.
So Melissa, talk about that in detail. What you're doing in terms of the space you have, and I mean, is it a dedicated space, or what do you have? And then what are you doing with classes?
So we have, it's, as I said, a little old building. So it's like a tiny little center entrance colonial. And, so there's two rooms right when you walk in the front door. And so now what I have is a big table in both of those rooms. And when we don't have classes going on, I use it as display space. So I do a lot of filling up the table, emptying off the table, filling up the table, emptying off the table. But I can't dedicate, you know, my prime retail space to just a blank table when we're not having classes. So that said, you know, we've kind of have it down to a science now, and things get rotated around, and people know that this is how you where you stash things when people are having classes. So we do have classes. We have four different knitting classes each week where people just bring in whatever project they're working on, and some of the people are brand new knitters. Some people have been knitting for 40 years. For some of them, it's more social. Some of it, it's more educational. You know, everyone gets out of it what they need to get out of it. And similarly, we have about four different needlepoint classes a week where people bring in whatever they're working on. And I, myself and the other main needlepoint teacher, you know, help them pick their stitches and design their project and pull everything together. Additionally, we have some specialty classes, where, you know, someone will have created a knitting project, and everyone in that class will then do that project, with educational help from the knitting teachers. And, similarly, I do that with needlepoint. Sometimes there are small projects where you come in, I've written a stitch guide, we go through it, we, you know, get everything done in 3 hours, and then sometimes I have bigger projects, I refer to them as my long-term projects, and I've done one every year pretty much since I've been here. I think I'm on my fourth one right now, where I take a bigger canvas and I write a stitch guide, and it's usually, you know, 12 to 15 pages long. And for the people that buy it remotely, they just receive their class kit and their stitch guide, and they work on their own, and the stitch guide has a ton of detail. And then for the local people, I do it where they come in once a month and we do a section of it at a time. And I've just found that that way people aren't overwhelmed and they actually finish their projects. You know, sometimes you go to a class for 2 days and then you leave and you never touch it again and it's resting in the closet. But if you kind of are given a sixth of the project to do, and people tend to kind of quote unquote get their homework done, even though I tell them that there's no demerits, you know, they won't get noodle whipped if they come in and they haven't finished what we did last month. But it's great for me because I actually love to see the fact that people finish them, because there's nothing more guilt ridden for most of us than to have those works in process, hiding in our closets. So, that works out great for us.
No, that's really neat that you have that focus, because that's, I would venture a vast majority of people who take classes anywhere in the needlework hobby have this bunch of, oh, I started this class and then it ended and I never finished it. And,
yeah.
Guilty as charged.
Yeah. Well, so am I. No, that's, yeah. But it happens a lot, and you're enthusiastic at the time, and then you go back and you were working on another project, and so it gets set aside, and yeah, there you have it.
Right.
Yeah, adds up. Yeah. So you run a pretty good rack of classes, and Kim, you have now you've got your current store, and then you talked about building a classroom building when you get to the house. I think that's exciting.
Yeah, so you know, I'll kind of start with that. But when we and before we move over there, sometime very soon we'll launch that building project, which hopefully will go very quickly since it's new build. But and we'll try to retain the character of the house. So the idea is to build it kind of as a carriage house. The house was built in 1878 originally, so something along the lines of a carriage house or an old barn that would be appropriate for the time period of the house. And then on the inside, it'll be open. Underneath with maybe a galley kitchen in the back so that we can have a large class there. I actually did a grand opening here in March, and had to close down and let them finish the building I'm in here, but we had 46 women in that class, and it's hard to find a space, to house anything over, you know, 15 or 20 people. You have to look really hard, and Asheville is, you know, a relatively expensive location to rent space, and so I have the property there, and, I think the best solution for me is just to build my own building and, you know, and have it be what I want it to be, you know, and I've planned for this for several years. So, I put a little money behind, to do that with. And so that's the goal, to do that and have that ready for, you know, spring of next year when we move over. And, you know, we've got a lot of things planned. I'm pretty excited about it. Of course, I don't teach classes during the week, yet, because we're only 4 weeks old. But on the weekends, I usually teach, you know, like entry level and intermediate classes for cross stitch and needlepoint. And then I have, and counted needlepoint. And then I have, you know, a local person who's going to teach punch needle for us. And we have a lot of people who are interested in that. And then when the time comes, I'll start to layer in there some hand embroidery. You know, also, and I'll do a little bit of that, but I may bring some people in for that. So that's kind of the ongoing classes. And I have a pretty good schedule coming up for teachers who are coming in. So in August of this year, the National Embroiderers Guild Association meeting. Women coming in for that. So we scheduled some classes at the beginning of the week,
Kim,
that don't.
Kim?
Yeah.
You cut out again on us there. You said
okay.
Something about the National Embroidery Guild or something that you were.
Right.
And
so
then we lost you.
Can you hear me now okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So the National EGA Embroiderers Guild Association has their national seminar in Asheville this year. And so that's the first time that they've ever came to Asheville. And there'll be a few hundred women who come into town for that. So we scheduled a couple of classes preceding that in the beginning of the week. They start kind of in the middle of the week. So we have two classes in the beginning of the week that week in August. And one of them kicks off about an 18-month series for us. So the first class is August the 14th, and it's a sampler lecture that is closed off with a black work workshop, and that's taught by Susan Greening Davis. And so she'll bring in, and I've actually already have them in my possession, a number of antique vintage samplers, and she will give us a discussion on those samplers and kind of their history and what they meant to the girls and the women and sometimes the boys who stitched those samplers. And then she'll finish off that lecture with a black work workshop, which is also, you know, a very old traditional type of embroidery. But it'll be something manageable that people can finish, so we're really proud of that. And then the next day, since we still have her here, she designed a pin cushion for the shop that actually uses a squirrel, which is part of our logo, and it sits on a vintage sewing clamp. And she's used some German banding on that, which I'm pretty excited to have a really beautiful selection of that German banding that I brought myself back over from Germany. It's a little bit hard to import in the different styles that I've got it in, so I'm pretty excited to be able to show that to people. And then in September, she comes back again to do what we call a fall fling, and that'll be a recurring class every year. So in September and in the spring, you know, we'll host somebody, maybe Susan, maybe some other people. But we have a beautiful little purse also done on the German banding that is self-finishing. So one of the things that Susan's really known for in the industry is creating projects that are self-finishing. So there's something that you actually can, and most people do, finish the project without having to take it to a framer or do something else with it. So we're pretty excited about that. And then the sampler lecture series will pick up and continue. And so we, you know, I think I'm okay to say this at this point. We haven't nailed down the date for this person, but she's agreed to come, so we're working on the date. But Claudia Dutcher Kistler of Dutch Treat Designs is an expert on Bristol orphanage samplers. And so she's going to be coming sometime in the fall of the year, I hope, to do a lecture series on the Bristol samplers. And she has a number of those in her personal collection that she'll bring. People will actually, again, get to touch them and see them. And she's a great expert on the history around those samplers. So she'll give us a discussion on that. And she has a project for the end of that. Also, a small project, so it's something that's very manageable and doable. And then in January, we have Nicola Parkman of Hands Across the Sea, who's coming over from England. And she also is bringing the actual vintage samplers, not the reproductions, because she has those too. But she's going to be bringing over some of her antique samplers for people to actually get to see and look at. And she'll give us a great lecture on, you know, the history of those samplers. She's wonderful. If you've ever seen her charts, she just does a beautiful chart. She does include in there, you know, history around the sampler and the you know, kind of what was going on in the world when the sampler came to be. And so she does a beautiful job with that. And then she has specially designed a needle book workshop for that. So the samplers that Nicola does are large samplers. They're beautiful. And it was kind of overwhelming to think about, you know, trying to teach one of those in a class. So we concluded on, you know, talking about the samplers, the reproduction process that she does with her workers, and then do a small class, you know, on a needle book that kind of draws one of the samplers. So we're pretty excited about that. We've got two more lecturers to add. I'm talking to a couple of folks, but I can't announce it yet. But this will cover kind of an 18-month period for us. So it was kind of our entryway into the industry. We wanted to let people know that we do appreciate samplers. And also, you know, it kind of goes back to what I was talking about with education, that I really want people to understand the history of needlework, and the samplers are a great way to do that. You know, you learn so much about the stitches and so much about, you know, what was going on in the world when these things came to be. So pretty excited about that. And then as part of that, I was just unbelievably privileged last year to acquire what we're pretty sure is an Ackworth sampler. It has all of the qualities of an Ackworth. I purchased it in England from a very reputable dealer who knew I was a new shop owner and gave me a price I could actually afford. So it was, you know, those things are so crazy expensive, and then sometimes, you know, you find out they're not real. And so I bought it someplace where I'm really happy with it, and we've been working on a design for that. So we're going to launch a stitch along for that that'll run through that whole period, that whole 12-day, 2-month period, and give people a chance, you know, if they choose to stitch a sampler that's just a really beautiful, unusual Ackworth. It is unusual because of its color. It's got a lot of color in it, which is not so typical, and it's got some beautiful motifs. So we've been working hard to bring a lot of things together like that, so I'm pretty excited about all that.
That's quite a program. Okay, we got to wrap this thing up. You got something else, Christine?
No. Oh. I was just saying it's impressive that all of that has happened and the shop's only been open for 4 weeks. So you have quite a ramp up to look forward to, but there's so many exciting things going on, and you've got such good teachers coming in that I think it's going to be great.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. And, you know, I should preface that with the fact that I've been working on this for a long time. So we've been in our brick and mortar for 4 weeks, but we've actually been a shop since 2014. So we kind of launched, and when I was living in Cary, and I ran it out of the bottom of my house for a while. So we had a local community there. All of our shops had closed. And then I took it online for a couple of years while I traveled for my day job. And so we brought it back here and relaunched it in a brick and mortar. So all of those things haven't just happened in the last 4 weeks. I'm not that good. But, you know, we certainly have been working on it for a while, and you know, a lot of good people are willing to come and teach and talk, and for that I'm very grateful. Yeah,
that's good. All right, Melissa, do you get to do any personal stitching?
Oh, well, Not so much, although I try to incorporate my classes around that, which is the good news. A lot of times people will want to do something that I wanted to do anyways. So, you know, I try to make it so it goes both ways, so to speak.
I mean, it's just always, you work with it all day long, and at the end of the day, you know, do you want to sit down and do more of it, or you just want to be done with it, you know?
Well, the interesting thing is, when I was just the employee here, I would have quite a number of opportunities to stitch during the day. And I don't know why I've been so fortunate, and I feel like it's not going to continue, but somehow it has been. We have been insanely busy since we opened. It's a wonderful problem to have, but it's just, I can't figure out like why I've been so lucky, because there were days, you know, usually in the summertime, there's many days where, you know, you might have somebody walk in maybe once every hour and a half. We'll have 3 and 4 people in here at a time all day long. And that's not how it was last summer. I think I've been fortunate to have a lot of media coverage. And so a lot of people checking things out, a lot of people coming back in to see the redo, people liking what they see. I'm not really sure how it's all adding up, but the good news is that we've been crazy busy, but that actually means that I never get to actually touch a needle all day long, other than maybe my students occasionally. So when I do go home at night, I do still try to find half hour or so to stitch, but lately it's been on my long-term project that I have to get planned for kickoff in October. So,
No pressure on that, huh?
Yeah, somehow it always gets done. I'm not sure how, but we all know this. You set yourself a timeline, and somehow it all happens.
Yep. Kim, do you get to stitch much?
Not too much. I do make sure that when we have our stitching group here on Thursday nights, that I actually sit down and stitch with the ladies and the guys that come in. And so honestly, that's about the only time lately. We just, you know, like Melissa, we have so much going on that it's hard for me to do anything more than that. But yeah, I do try to make sure that I actually sit down on Thursday nights with these guys for a few hours and stitch. And, you know, I'm up and down a lot during that time, but I do enjoy it. So hopefully there will be more time in the future.
I'm just glad to hear that you have at least one male person show up every now and then. That's encouraging.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
I actually taught a 17-year-old guy how to stitch our second week in business, so that was kind of cool.
Wow.
And he stayed for stitch night, and, you know, the ladies loved him, and it was great.
Yay.
That's awesome.
Yay. All right, we got to wrap this up. Thanks a lot, you guys. It's really been a pleasure hearing about
these businesses.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's just terrific. Good luck to both of you. It sounds like you both have solid plans that are going to make you grow well into the future, so that's great.
We're going to need a year update.
Yes.
Oh, that'd be fabulous.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yep. All right, that's going to be it. Thanks again, and with that, we'll end this version of Fiber Talk, and we'll be back. Yeah, I guess this will be on a Sunday, so that means we'll be back on a Wednesday, because, yeah,
yes,
that's what we do. Yep. Thanks for listening.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks.